Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday, the 3rd of October. Ray Graff, Sarah LeDuc making the cash this morning and doing a great job. We'll go over to them in just a few moments as we continue our Lockbox special edition of the roundtable. And we begin this morning with our incredible panel, and we'll be with them for a good chunk of the day. We also, later on, are going to be welcoming a very special guest. Her name is Arlie Russell Hochschild, best-selling author, professor emerita of sociology at the University of California, Berkeley. And her new book is Stolen Pride, Loss, Shame, and the Rise of the Right. Arlie Hochschild is interesting to me because when, in 2016, when Hillbilly Elegy became the book that was thought of to be the explanatory thesis as to how Donald Trump won the White House, Arlie Hochschild had a book out at the same time. And she said, well, this is my thought on it. And it was an antidote, really, to what J.D. Vance was writing about at the time. So we have her new book out, and we'll be talking to Arlie. Arlie, I think, joined us for several hour programs, two in 2016, two in 2020, a couple times in between then, and is with us again for the new book. So we're very excited to have her. She'll be with us at 10:30 this morning. So all of that coming up. But first, let's talk about the news of the day and what is happening. And a reminder, you can always keep pledging and helping out the Lockbox, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. We welcome a trio of amazing panelists this morning as we get underway to discuss all the weirdness happening in the world. Public policy and communications expert Teresa Bourgeois is with us. Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing well. And I'd like to begin with a shout out of thanks to all of our National Guard and firefighters in New York State and around the country who are going to help our fellow Americans who are really suffering in the South and Georgia and North Carolina and so on and so forth. They're just doing really terrific work. All the volunteers are going there because, you know, the photos are devastating and the work is hard and they're leaving their families behind. So thanks to them and their families for what they're doing.
I mean, we'll talk about this, but there are towns in North Carolina that are just gone.
Right.
And a larger thing than you can even, you know, wrap your brain around. And that's just some of the damage that's been done in the region.
And the rescue and recovery is challenging, and the people down there need everybody's help. And to see that and to see what they're doing, it's really gratitude. And it's what we are as a country. We come together when things like this happen. Thanks to them.
Pictures are just devastating. I'm glad we have them because it does bring you there to the moment and realize just right. How horrendous things are. We also welcome Executive Director of the Legal Aid Society of Northeastern New York, Nick Rangel. Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. And I'm originally from North Carolina, and my second mom has been out of power for 7 days now. She's in North Carolina still. And I mean, the impact has just been tremendous. But I am excited to share, just continue to announce our upcoming event. Legal Aid Society is celebrating our annual awards ceremony next week, October 10th, and we are really excited to hear from Amy Godine. She's the author of The Black Woods, Pursuing Racial Justice in the Adirondack Frontier.
Oh, yeah.
She's giving our keynote, and we also have opening remarks by Rachel Rossi. She's the director of the Office for Access to Justice at the Department of Justice for the at the federal level. Folks can learn more about that event on our website, lasny.org. It's next Thursday at The Loft in Troy.
Next Thursday at The Loft, and you can find out more at lasny.org. Also joining us on this Thursday morning, Wall Street investment banker Mark Whitman. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, Joe.
Mic four. There you are. Try again.
How am I now?
You are in. You're booming.
Great.
Go ahead.
I'm good. Thanks for the mic.
Thanks, Mike, for the mic. Well, good morning. Welcome all. And let's get started on the news of the day. That's what we do here on the Roundtable, and that's I know why many of you pledge and for all of the things we do here, and we are so grateful for what you do, and we thank you for that, and are appreciative of what you have done and what you will do over the next several days. All right, so let's get started with the story that broke yesterday. That was I almost laughed myself off the side of the road yesterday because I was listening to the nobody was hurt. I was
trying not to be
I was listening to CNN, and at 5 o'clock. Jake Tapper breathlessly came in and said that there's breaking news. And that's not a mean shot at Jake Tapper. I like Jake Tapper. So, and said, breaking news. The judge has unsealed new evidence in the federal election case against Donald Trump, and our reporters just got it, and they're breathlessly going through it to find out the information in it. And Tanya is here, and Tanya, you're going to tell us what's going. And Tanya doesn't realize she's on TV or on mic, and she's like, I don't know, I don't find anything in here that's any different that we didn't already know. And Jake Tapper says, we're on the air, and she goes, oh, well, I don't really see anything here then. However, Judge Tanya, yeah, it was.
Well, Joe, you're lucky it was Jake Tapper and not Wolf Blitzer doing the intro, because Wolf Blitzer would have proposed that it was world turning.
That's right. It was major news. Judge Tanya Chutkan made public portions of a filing by prosecutors setting out their argument for why the case should go forward despite the Supreme Court's ruling on presidential immunity. So I think the quickest way to set this up is that this was originally shot down by the court and said that the president had the immunity after the Supreme Court decision. So then Jack Smith and as special counsel goes back and they rework it, and then they once again file it for the charges to go against Donald Trump. And this is the unsealing of that, of what the arguments are going to be. When one of the lawyers, when told by an aide that Vice President Mike Pence was in peril as the rioting of the Capitol Hill escalated on January 6th, President Trump replied, "So what?" When one of his lawyers told him that his false claims that the election had been marred by widespread fraud would not hold up in court, Mr. Trump responded, "The details don't matter." On a flight with Mr. Trump and his family after the election, an Oval Office assistant heard Mr. Trump say, "It doesn't matter if you won or lost the election, you still have to fight like hell." Those accounts are among new evidence disclosed in a court filing made public on Wednesday, in which the special counsel investigating Trump made his case for why the former president is not immune from prosecution on federal charges of plotting to overturn the 2020 election. Going back to the reporter saying, "I don't see anything new here," and that goes back to much of this had been released in one form or the other during the January 6th hearings, and was through a series of witnesses and firsthand accounts was told to the special counsel at that point. So, but there still is some information in here that is important, and of course, interesting that it was released less than 35 days to go before the election. So, who would like to begin?
Well, I mean, yeah, I just, there is so much precedent for parsing out what are official acts, what are non-official acts, what are acts that have to do with your own, personal or private interests. Public officers' laws in states across the country have parsed this out for elected officials at the state level. In New York State, public officers' law has lots of case notes on this. it's not surprise. None of this is new information, first off, but how it's being presented to the court is evolving to respond to the Supreme Court's decision and parsing out what was under the umbrella of his presidential duties versus what he was doing for his own personal gain is a really important question, and not at all surprising that that's what, you know, Jack is doing and has had to do here to refile. So I do think it'll be interesting to see how the argument evolves.
Right. I think that the key step was that what the court said, I'm not the lawyer, but just restating, what the court said is it official business or is it personal business? And what the judge said is, okay, special counsel, special prosecutor, you come back and tell us what's in the personal business bucket and what's in the office business bucket. And that's basically what this does, pull everything out and separates it out. And I do think that what's new is that they basically brought the receipts, right? They brought the evidence of things that we knew, suspected to be true, but now there's more documentation. And the bottom line is that Trump knew. You know, he knew he didn't win. He had been told by top officials, close aides, family members over and over again that he didn't win, and privately acknowledged that he didn't win. Yet he has still pursued and continues to pursue this lie. And what strikes me is that he's all upset that this is coming out now. Well, it's coming out now because he has delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but this would have come out in January originally if he had not fought to keep it to be delayed.
Last January, and, yeah.
Yes.
Right, and
yes,
probably even sooner because he's delayed,
yeah,
delayed,
sorry,
delayed.
Yes.
And if he continues to say, you know, nothing to see here, well, if there's nothing to see here and he's not concerned about his innocence, why is he fighting so hard to not have this go to trial and you know, to move forward? But I also want to swing back to the vice presidential debate for a minute. Because I think that the most consequential thing that came out of the debate, the vice presidential debate, was the last segment where J.D. Vance would not, perhaps because of fear of Trump's reaction, but would not acknowledge that Trump did not win the election. He would not acknowledge that he would have done what Pence did. And I think that that is absolutely disqualifying. How can you be President Trump? How can you be vice president of this country when you can't even acknowledge the peaceful transfer of power? And there was all this talk about how well he did and he spoke so well, but there was also acknowledgement that he lied over and over again. And there's people are just, they're normalizing the lying because he lies in a nice tone and he, you know, speaks affirmatively. But lying has consequences, and, you know, not focusing on truth, not having a base of truth is a problem. It's a problem in this case. It's a problem in a lot of the other things he talks about. This is a really dangerous and costly pattern, and it's just not what we are as a country.
We're going to be going over to our Lockbox Central here in just about 2 minutes, but I want to hear from Mark, and then we'll if we don't get to all of your comments, we'll continue on the other side of the break.
I got a lot. And let me tell listeners, if your memory's like mine, you might want to get out a pen and pencil. I got something for you. You might want to take down, which I think is really insightful. The presidential debate, by the way, reminded me, or the vice presidential debate, reminded me of a country bumpkin trundling up to the porch of some custodial-like, slick-talking figure. And he and we almost got fooled, but as we were being led into the mega cottage, the country bumpkin asked one last question of this custodial figure. Said, "You know, why are your teeth and your eyes so big?" And just at the end, when he was going to take us in, Governor Walz asked the right question, and I think brought us all back to the sad reality of where we are.
Well, I think it was more than, I mean, health care, there were a whole series of questions that, anyway, I don't want to take
your
time.
Yeah, I'm not minimizing.
But he wasn't a bumpkin. I think, anyway, go ahead.
I'm not minimizing his overall performance, but I will say it did sort of snap you back to reality.
Right.
In a way that you hadn't been in the rest of the debate, and it drew the most important contrast. On this thing, I didn't see much new, although it's always amazing to me that there are still untold details of the depths of the depravity that Trump and his allies went to. It's a little, it's not surprising, but it's interesting. The one thing I would point listeners to is it's a op-ed piece in the Washington Post from April 26 by Alexandria Petri. I only ever read the name. I never pronounce it. It talks about a time traveler who goes back to the Constitutional Convention and says, I know you're almost going to sign it, but before you sign it, please put in the document that the president can't do crimes. And I'd encourage people to read it. It is one of those times when humor is actually the most insightful way to understand a problem that we face.
We'll take a break. We'll come back and continue our conversation this morning. We welcome your letters as well. Now back to Ray and Sarah.
Oh, thanks a lot. The number here is 800-323-9262. A short little spurt here of fundraising, and we hope to remind you of why we're here, Sarah LaDuke.
Yes, indeed. We are here for a number of reasons. The foremost reason is to raise money for WAMC and to help shorten the fund drive. It's part of why we're here this morning. We also have a challenge on the table.
Yes, we do.
$2,500 from Anonymous of Burnt Hills, New York. If we can reach the $275,000 point in the lockbox by 10 a.m., which is about 33 minutes, 15 seconds from now.
We're doing pretty well, but we have a ways to go.
1-800-323-9262. We're also asking people this morning, what is your number one election issue? What is the thing you're most concerned about going into the future, going into the voting booth, the, you know, philosophical voting booth, maybe not literal booth.
Right, not
but
anymore.
As you go vote, as you choose your candidates, what is the topic that you think they should care about the most, that they should work on when elected?
For instance, Joanne in Hudson pledged this morning and said, my biggest issue going into this election is definitely keeping our democracy. So there's another one for democracy.
It's the forerunner right now, nearly tied with climate change.
Joanne says, if we lose our democracy, we'll never get that back. Thanks to Anonymous of Albany, who is getting the Vote T-shirt. What
Wonderful.
Is that?
The Vote T-shirt is a brand new WAMC T-shirt. It's a black T-shirt with a WAMC logo on the front chest and on the back. It says, vote, be heard. The V of vote is a check mark in a box.
It is beautiful.
Be heard. The vote text is orange. It says, be heard in yellow. And then there is another WAMC microphone in white underneath that on the back of the shirt.
Thanks to Doreen in Cottekill, New York, who says, thank you so much, WAMC, for all you do. And Doreen, thanks for what you did. 800-323-9262 is the number. A challenge is on the table from Anonymous in Burnt Hills, New York. $2,500 if we can hit the $275,000 mark, and we're about $10,683 away.
About.
Close. I mean, give or take.
Thanks to Tracy of East Greenbush, New York, who says, WAMC is such a trusted source, and I enjoy the roundtable. The staff and volunteers are doing a wonderful job. Thank you, Tracy. Thanks to new member Emily in Glenford, New York. Jeff from Cahoes says, my third pledge.
Whoa.
Thank you, Jeff, because we need to end this. Oh, it's barely started, but thank you. The issue with which I am most concerned are the tens of thousands of people listening to WAMC right now who have not yet kicked in. We have no time for fund drives in October. If you can, please do give. There's no time like the present.
Okay. You know what? I second that emotion.
Thank you also to Sandra in Troy, New York, Cynthia in Albany, New York, Anonymous in West Hurley, Jim in Gansvert, who says, my one election issue, overturned Citizens United. I guess that falls into the restore democracy category. Another vote for maintaining democracy.
By the way, I should say that hold that thought on the one issue that drives you to the polls, because there's going to be a Vox Pop about that at 2 o'clock.
Is there? All
I
right.
heard from Tony Yang. He's under the weather. There'll be no computer show today. We will open it up for your thoughts about the one thing that makes you want to get to the polls, or maybe you've already voted. That'll be at 2 p.m. today on Vox Pop. We'll have you call in. Different phone number, and I won't give it now.
Right. The phone number now to pledge is 800-323-9262. Anonymous in Lakeville, Connecticut says election is all about democracy. That's another vote for democracy.
All right.
Thanks to Anonymous in Dalton, Massachusetts, and a new member, Laura in Saugerties, New York, whose number one issue is women's rights.
Welcome. Now, I think we have to go back to the round table,
do
we not?
We do.
All right. So once again, I'll give you the number, and remember, you can pledge while this show is going on, while they're talking. Just take a moment, maybe go online, keep your radio up loud. WAMC.org to make your secure online pledge, or you can call 800-323-9262. Now back to the Wunderkind, Joe Donahue, and the Roundtable panel.
I don't want you to ever feel you have to come back. I just, if you need the extra time, take the extra time. We're in with you.
But we're listening to the panel.
Well, yeah.
Mark was saying something.
We'll get to them. Well, we'll get to them. We'll promise. And by the way, if any time you just want to leave the microphones open, we were talking the whole time you all were.
Really?
Yeah, going on in the issues.
Leave your thing on?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if we leave ours on, we'll be talking about donuts. And really, I think you need to.
Well, we were sort of doing that,
yeah,
too.
Okay,
but that's all
fair
right.
Enough.
We'll go back to Ray and Sarah in just a few minutes, in about 15 minutes or so. And they're doing great work and continue to help fill the lockbox on this Thursday morning. 1-800-323-9262 and WAMC.org.
The WAMC socks are so cute and fuzzy. I can't wait to have a pair.
Yes. Do you not have a pair?
Not yet, but well, I will pledge that so that I can get a
where
pair.
Where did you find that pair?
Right here on the table.
Well,
no one's worn them
yet,
I promise.
Them.
They're still in the wrapper.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure those out, but you take those and we'll get socks to whoever else needs them.
But everyone should get socks.
Yes, I agree.
And they should pledge.
1-800-323-9262. All right, let's go back. Mark, you were we had to cut you off there in the middle.
That's okay. Joe, with respect to the whole lot of the federal prosecutions of the former president, I have a sad thought. And a lot of folks like me were almost rabid about the fact that we need to prosecute this guy in order to further the case of justice in our country. And Teresa, just give me a second here. And I'll let our writers wait till I'm done before you write. But if you look at it, in the end, the project has failed utterly. If you assume that Donald Trump is president, first of all, with every indictment, his popularity rose in the polls. And we are now at a coin flip as to whether or not he takes office. If he takes office, he will extinguish the federal prosecutions against him. So in prosecuting him, we aided the guy's attempt to return to the presidency. But also something else happened. The Supreme Court took such an aggressive eraser to the Constitution and the ideal that all people are equal under the Constitution, that it tore a hole in the Constitution. And we yet do not know how big that hole is. They haven't defined that. They just said there's a hole here for the president and he can sneak some stuff through. So if you look at the project in total, we did not forward the cause of justice in this country by trying to prosecute Donald Trump. We actually, unfortunately, at least in the federal sense, have set it back.
I don't disagree with a thing you just said, other than the alternative would not have been to prosecute, and I don't see how we not could have not done that.
I disagree with most of it for the same reason. That, or you want to answer him first?
No. Go ahead. You can pile on.
Because you cannot not prosecute somebody for the mishandling of classified documents. You cannot look the other way at what happened on January 6th. What is the precedent you set? If you look the other way at inciting an insurrection that has talk about tearing into our democracy, and what does it say to the police officers, 140 police officers who were severely injured? What does it say to the fabric of our democracy? You can't look the other way, and I don't think we know yet what the outcome will be. One of the things that's clear is that the voters will have a clear say in the outcome and part of the outcome. But I think it was essential. And all of these details would not have come out. Now, yes, Donald Trump has done what he has done throughout his whole life, which is avoid being held accountable for his actions by throwing a lot of lawyers at the problem, a lot of money. In this case, he's been using money, low-dollar donors to his campaign are funding his defense, which I think is reprehensible also. But I'm hoping that in the end, that the American people send a real clear signal that an insurrection is not, you know, a president cannot be involved in an insurrection. A president, you're not presidential if you mishandle classified documents, and on and on and on.
Nick.
I mean, I don't think the Supreme Court had to make this ruling that to identify official acts and unofficial acts, because the court hearing the case itself could have distinguished between what was an official act and therefore not criminal, and what was not an official act and also criminal on its own. And so it does set this new precedent that it had no business setting, and as Mark describes, just kind of really impacts and has a devastating impact, I would even say, on the Constitution and the powers of the president. And it does seem that it was more intentionally a delay tactic than it was a necessary rule holding to have. And I think that's unfortunate. But at least at this point, we are moving forward. But we won't have a resolution before the election, which is kind of the problem here.
But isn't that a reminder to voters that it matters who you, in many different ways, who you select as president, because that person is going to choose the Supreme Court?
Well, they know that, though. And many conservative voters that I know are supportive of the Trump administration, not because they like Trump, but because he is an effective judicial appointer, and that he has appointed these particular people to SCOTUS and hundreds of other bench appointments across the country, right? Like, that was the intent. The Second Amendment folks, the anti-choice folks, they did that intentionally, knowing that the result would be a conservative SCOTUS. So,
and I agree with you. A narrow but essential group of voters did that. But I think the broader group of voters hadn't thought so much about the importance of the Supreme Court, even though people have talked about it. And I think it's opened people's eyes in a profound way to a broader group of people about how important it is who is selecting the Supreme Court.
I'm talking about non-lawyer voters who are friends.
I agree with you, non-voter. I'm sorry, wasn't clear. I'm talking about there was a narrow group of voters, not lawyers, but a narrow group of conservative voters, the Federalist Society types, who were voting for the purposes of the court.
Yeah, I don't think that's true. I think the Second Amendment coalitions have used that narrative for a very long time. The anti-choice coalitions have used the narrative of court appointments for a very long time. And I think that the moneyed coalitions, the coalitions that wanted to overturn Chevron, have used the Second Amendment and anti-choice groups to support the bridge between general public voters and very powerful corporate money.
And I think
that kind of conservative court across the country.
Mark, you started all this.
Yeah, I did. And I didn't, Joe and Teresa. I don't know that we had another option. I'm not saying that the country made a mistake. I just think you need to look at the results of what's happened with a sober analysis and think about it. If you had it, this is entirely unfair. But I now actually have taken our Attorney General Merrick Garland off the hook in my mind as responsible for Trump's possible reelection. I think now it's mostly Mitch McConnell. If he would have whipped 10 votes, this would all be done. And the reason I take Merrick Garland off of the hook is I think that the courts, and particularly and always the Supreme Court, would have ensured that none of this would have come to judgment before the election. I think given what the court did intentionally with this one case, makes it clear it would have done it in all cases if it needed to. If you could have gone, this is a totally unreasonable way to look at it, but if you go back, if you take what you know now, go back in a time machine, what you do, I guess, is try to hold all the indictments until just after the election in the hopes that if you don't boost Trump's popularity along the way by indicting him, and that you're still inside the statute of limitations. Now, that's entirely unreasonable, but I do think as evidenced by the fact that we've spoken about it, I do think looking at the consequences of what we've done in the pursuit of justice and how it's been degraded is worth looking at.
Well, I think the problem is, and I think you hit it right about Mitch McConnell, I think the problem in all of this is that, the normal firebreak that you would have had, which is that Republicans, like they did with Nixon, saying, this is not right, this has got to stop. They went to the White House, a group of Senate Republicans went to the White House and said to Richard Nixon, you're done. And in this case, Mitch McConnell, the whole range of Republicans, Stefanik, the long list of them, for the first 24 hours, they said, this is terrible. And then he presumably made phone calls, and then they shifted. And they did not do what they should have done, which is say, this is not tolerable. This can't go on. Because that would have set a completely different tone in this country. That's the problem. Garland wasn't the problem. The Republicans were enablers in all of this, and they didn't put a stop to it.
Congressional leaders and senators went to the White House and said, you're done. Oh, right. That was Biden. Sorry. I apologize. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, you could just see this.
That was Howard Baker.
You could just see the skit where McConnell and all the others, McCarthy, who spoke out so forcefully.
Yes.
They're just about to knock on Trump's door at the White House to pull him out, or at least to tell him, right,
and
you're done, and we're impeaching you, or we're going to convict you. And if you don't resign, and for some reason, right, they couldn't muster the political courage to knock on the door.
And that's what changed the whole tone. The reason you have this tone, the reason you have this acceptance of this just torrent of illegalities is because of the enablers. And
well,
they're the Republicans.
I mean, I do think hindsight's 2022, but also, I mean, or 2020? Not 2020.
It's 2024 in this case.
It's Project 2025. Hindsight is Project 2025. My point is that when you look back and you say, oh, okay, this woulda, coulda, shoulda, but the Supreme Court is huge in this too. I mean, this is a major block in any sort of rational thought of how a case was going to be prosecuted and pursued over a period of time.
Absolutely. And we have Chief Justice Roberts writing memos like pushing the court to make a swift decision on Trump's immunity, on presidential immunity. I mean, they were chomping at the bit. This isn't just Mitch McConnell. There's like an entire network
of enablers.
Of enablers, but they're not just enablers. They're intentionally pursuing a Project 2025 playbook, and Trump is just the mouthpiece for it.
I actually do think I like the analysis that takes Garland out of it, because I do think Trump, and I've said this for a long time, Trump is a political problem. There has to be a political solution. And we thought, I was one of many who thought, oh, there's a legal solution here. We're going to get this guy. And boy, were we wrong.
Well, it's at the ballot box. That's really ultimately the solution. The final firebreak is at the ballot box. It's going to happen. It's happening now when people are, you know, bank your vote early, folks. But that's where the other systems have not worked. And so now the option is the ballot box.
All right, we are going to head over to Ray and Sarah in just a moment. A reminder that our panel is made up this morning of Teresa Bourgeois, Nick Rangel, and Mark Whitman. We also welcome your letters, and we'd love to hear what you have to say on these various topics. And we welcome you. I will say that the panel or the pitchers are asking a specific question. And we want you to, so if you want to do that and of the important issues, then make sure you actually go in that route, right?
Mailing in about it?
What?
Are they emailing?
Yeah. Oh, you're off now.
Oh.
No, now Sarah's off.
I'm off?
Now you're
on.
On
again?
Now you're on. Yeah, they're emailing, but which is fine.
Smooth.
That's fine. We can certainly pass them on. I can forward them right over to you.
Well, we'd like that to be, you know, accompanied with a little folding money.
That's
bottom
exactly
line.
Right, Ray.
Yeah,
that is exactly right. So it's just, you know what? It's just paperwork. That's
yeah,
all
it's
it
fine.
Is.
Okay.
It's all
no
paperwork. But we'll get to some letters that have to do with the subjects at hand and continue that. But we...
What you're saying is we're torpedoing your show.
I didn't say that at all.
You can't torpedo this show, Ray.
Why? Is it already sunk?
All right. Quite the contrary.
Thank you very much. We'll take it from here for a few moments. Why don't you have a donut, and we'll get back to you shortly.
Thank you. Thanks, panel.
800-323-9262. That's our telephone number, Sarah LaDuke.
Yes,
why
indeed.
Is that key?
We are trying to raise money. We have a challenge on the table, $2,500 from Anonymous of Burnt Hills, New York. If we can reach the $275,000 point in the lockbox by 10 a.m., and we're at 266, 276. So
right.
A ways to go, but we are, you know, hopeful that this could happen if people, you know, get the message, tune in, dial in, go online, and donate to your public radio station now.
About $8,700 to go to make this challenge. We want you to be a part of that. 800-323-9262. Don't wait until next week. Let's get back to regular programming as soon as we can. Election coverage is vital. We got to reach our goal as quickly as possible to get back to 24/7, full-time, all about that information that you need. 800-323-9262. Sarah LaDuke, we got some people to thank here.
Right.
Thanks to David in Charleston, South Carolina, who is a new member, who says,
welcome.
Wadmalaw Island for WAMC. I don't know if I said the name right. It's Wadmalaw, I want to say. And thank you either way. I'm sure I didn't get the name of the island right. Thanks to Richard and Lynn in Falls Village, Connecticut. I don't know how we could have gotten through Trump's presidency without WAMC, says Richard and Lynn. Thank you all for all the excellent reporting. We love Joe Donahue. Shout out to all the people behind the scenes. Thanks to Anonymous in Clifton Park. Thanks to Olin in New Marlboro, Mass., who is a new member.
Welcome.
Thanks to Troy. No, thanks to Doris, who is in Troy. Well, also to Troy. It's a wonderful place. Doris says, thank you for keeping us informed. Hopefully people will get out to vote. Thanks to Anonymous in Longmeadow, Massachusetts. Janice and Skip in Safety Harbor, Florida. We've heard from them in past fund drives. I know because I looked up Safety Harbor the last time. And thank you, Janice and Skip, who are looking forward to a woman president. Thanks to John in Dalton, Massachusetts. Thanks to Harriet in Albany, New York. And thank you, everybody. We have a little ways to go. We're going to go back to the roundtable shortly, but we have a big challenge on the table, Sarah LaDuke.
We do indeed. $2,500 from Anonymous in Burton Hills, New York. If we can reach 275 by 10 a.m., that's about 12 and a half minutes from now. But we can do this if people get it and call in. Please, please, please help us make this challenge. Help us nudge up to the next benchmark goal in the lockbox. We will really appreciate it, and we can't, in fact, do it without you. 800-323-9262. Every little bit helps. Anything you can give helps extra now because it will help us make this challenge if you can show up for us. Please and thank you.
All right. I just want to say that this idea, this lockbox, was created to get a head start on the fund drive, right? And our fund drive is October 14th. Everything counts on day one. In past drives, when we were leading up to the fund drive, we would often take over the roundtable panel completely.
Whole panel, yes,
yeah.
Indeed. Yep.
And this time, we're making sure, basically, people said, we need this information, we need this news. And so we're trying to strike that balance. We're providing you with a full panel of experts, and we've had special panels as well with guests far flung all over the world, and we'll be doing that again, talking about important election topics. We're a little behind on the fundraising, not going to lie. We need you. 800-323-9262.
We have a week and a day to fill the lockbox, and we need to pick up the pace and raise more to keep our fund drive short. We've asked, we agree, and we can't do it without you. 800-323-9262.
Yeah.
Thanks to Deborah in West Hurley, New York, to new member Laura in East Greenbush, New York, who says, thank you for all your thoughtful coverage. We heard from Sally in Brooklyn, New York, who said, listening from North Chatham and Brooklyn, and love your excellent coverage, especially the stellar roundtable. Thank you all. We also heard from Mary Ellen in Cornwall on Hudson, who says, I'm now a sustaining member.
Hey!
Because it's never been more important to fight what the Republican Party has become. 1-800-323-9262. to $2,500 on the table in a challenge from Anonymous of Burnt Hills. Please call. Please support us. Help us make this challenge.
Yeah, and if we're going to make this challenge, we're going to need you to call even when we go back to the panel, which will happen in about 12 seconds. So I'll give you the number again. Please make your call, 800-323-9262, 800-323-9262, or online at wamc.org.
Thank you very much, Ray Graff and Sarah Leduc. Keep it coming, folks, and help fill that lockbox. We need your help, and we know you're there. We know that you want to help, and you know they've given you all the ways to do it. So, and all the reasons, and really good reasons, including a challenge. So please do what you can do. We'll go back to Ray and Sarah at the top of the hour. All right, letters on the Jack Smith laying out new evidence in the federal election case against Donald Trump that unsealed and opened yesterday. Amy says, a long-term benefit of all these cases against Trump, we know the GOP has The JOC has exposed the Supreme Court. That is the long-term benefit of these cases against Trump. Now we know, as the public, what we need to fight. Any thought on that? Hearing none, we go to the next letter. We go to Amy. Violence. The biggest election concern I have is that there will be violence if Trump is not elected.
Oh, boy. Buckle up, Buttercup. Just think about this. Unless unless Trump is the winner.
I don't think he meant to call you Buttercup.
No. Yeah. Sorry, I meant that generically. I didn't mean that for anyone. First of all, don't plan to stay up on election night. We're not going to know what's going on with any clarity. It's going to be days, if not weeks.
Unless
and during that period, unless it looks like Trump is going to win pretty clearly.
Or if Harris is going to win very clearly.
No, but if Harris is going to win very clearly, this is going to be, we're going to go through a period like we did last time, but on steroids, because the Republicans have sharpened their spears in the meantime. I mean, 30 cases, there's going to be 30 cases in each of the swing states. This is going to be...
They've already filed cases, right?
This, yeah, okay.
Preemptively.
I just get ready. This fight is going to be gruesome. And let's hope it's not violent. But I don't hold out a lot of assurance around that, given what we're dealing with here and given, frankly, the lack of the ability, at least in terms of the leaders, to bring consequences to bear. The one thing you got to hope for is that the folks, you know, with the horns who went out last time thinking that they were doing the president's bidding and defending democracy got the message that, no, you weren't. And when you violate the law, you spend some time in the clink. So, but I'll just say that the letter writer puts out a great point that unless this is a clear Trump victory, the period between the election and the inauguration could be quite hairy.
Yeah, I do know on the sort of the Reddit threads and some of the less well-known chatter spaces, people are
the semi-dark web.
I mean, it's not really dark because it's not the dark web, but yeah, like there's a lot of chatter about fear around even putting up like Harris yard signs because some voters are afraid that neighborhoods will be targeted for even low-level violence, but damage to their home or being, you know, having their cars impacted. So I do hear that there is a real fear. It's really specific to voters, that people are really internalizing that fear. And there is some evidence that people are being targeted. I think that should galvanize people to vote even more strongly and to be more encouraged or to get out and make sure Trump does not win. Because as Teresa's saying, if Harris wins handedly, if Harris has a clear lead, which Mark is shaking his head because it is so unlikely, but if Harris did have a clear lead, there would be no leg to stand on for these, you know, election deniers. They would be less likely to be convinced or easily convinced that actually Trump won and everyone else is lying, because there would just be so much more clear data. But it will be tight. There may be violence. I think we're prepared. I think having Biden in office right now helps ensure that there would be a much swifter and direct response, and it would be less likely to lead to injuring law enforcement and damaging the Capitol, right? Like, that we would get ahead of that violence.
Well, as
more with more, I mean, people are like, the Guard is trained now, right? Like, they've done drills. They're like preparing for what that looks like if people were to descend on the Capitol again.
Well, as a technical matter, they have already declared, and I can't remember the exact phrase I used to know, but it's like a high propensity event, whatever. They've already declared this a high risk event, the way that they do the inauguration,
right?
And so that there are already mechanisms in place to ensure at least the Capitol's protected, for the counting of the electoral votes in ways that they never had to before. So that process is already in place to protect the Capitol and those who are in it. But I do think that it was a really dangerous message when I can't think of his name, the Trump campaign director, his co-director is the guy. What's his name? Do you remember, Mark? In any case,
La Civita.
So La Civita has been saying, you know, the key day is not election day. The key day is the day of the electoral count, right? So their mindset is already, you know, this isn't over until the counting of the electoral votes. And that's really what I would call a distortion, but a real change in the way one has thought about our electoral process, which I think is a disturbing change, yet another reason for people to vote against these folks.
Yeah, and they're already sowing doubt in the electoral process in every corner. Either, right, like in Trump's mind and his campaign's mind, it's either we won or they cheated, and there is no alternative narrative. Like, and you just lost.
And him saying, holding up signs that say too big to rig, just presuming, and just reinforcing what both of you are saying, just presuming that creating, sowing doubt. And they've already, you know, they're investing and talking about how much money they're investing in the legal activities. And I believe they, as I say, you see that they've tried to change state by state who are the vote counters, election laws all over, and they have been not denied repeatedly, but in some cases they've been granted that. They've been reducing people's ability to vote at every turn here. They've been focused for 4 years on trying to make it harder to carry out our electoral process.
I just want to say Michigan, Georgia, and Arizona are all open carry states, so far as I know.
Mark.
All right. Let's go to a few
more. It's a
valid point, yeah. A few more letters here. There is a fallacy. This from Mary. There is a fallacy and what the voters decide regarding Trump. The voters don't actually matter because of the Electoral College. The candidate who wins the popular vote doesn't always get to be president. Because of the Electoral College, only voters in a few states actually get to decide the outcome of the election, and Trump knows it. That from Mary.
Can I say a little on that one?
Sure.
In theory, for the presidency, that's correct, but it matters who your members of Congress and who your senators are. And so I think every vote in every state does matter, because you have to vote not only for the presidency, but for your member of Congress and your senator. And so they really need a majority to rule. And also, I think particularly this time, having a resounding number of people vote in and is essential.
All right, we're going to pause and go over for some news, and we're also going to hear from Lockbox Central and see how things are going there to get the latest and to remind you of why it's so important, of what we're doing this morning and what you need to do this morning. And we'll hear from both Ray and Sarah in just a few minutes. But first, we go to the mighty Legal ID.
Okay, here's the number. Ready?
Yes.
1-800-323-9262.
1-800-323-9262. Or, of course, you may pledge online at WAMC.org.
Correct. And WAMC.org is our secure online pledging vessel for you. We're in Pledge Central here.
We are. If the phones ring, you're going to hear them now.
We have a few more minutes to raise about $7,330. $33.
And why do we need to make that amount? Because we have a challenge on the table from Anonymous in Burnt Hills, New York, who, if we reach the $275,000 point in the drive, will give us an additional $2,500.
Outstanding.
Incredibly generous.
We have people to thank. Thanks to Doris and Charles in Woodstock. Thanks to Nancy and Nancy in Germantown, who says, thanks for all you do. Love the roundtable and all your other great informative programming. Thanks to Bali in Glenmont. Thanks to Gary and Donna in Schenectady, who say, keep up the good work. Loves the roundtable. Thanks to Anonymous in Saratoga. Delete old sustaining membership. Done. Thanks to Joanna in New Paltz. Thanks to Benjamin in Gill, Massachusetts. Thanks to Anonymous in Troy, New York. Thanks to Daltrey in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, who says, keep up the good work.
Thank you. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. A challenge on the table that we really, really would love to make, but we can't do that without hearing from a number of people, you know, as quickly as possible by calling 800-323-9262 or pledging online at WAMC.org.
And Sarah LaDuke, we're making progress now. We're in the 6,000s. We need to keep rolling along. We have another three and a half minutes in which to make this challenge. We got to hit 275, and then Anonymous in Burnt Hills will give us another 2,500. So let's make the phones ring. You'll hear them now. 800-323-9262.
1-800-323-9262. Thank you to Anonymous in Clifton Park, New York, and Ronnie in Queensbury, New York, who says, I've been enjoying this new format for fundraising. So many experienced experts on various topics. I hope you will continue this for future fundraisers. Keep up the good work.
800-323-9262. And thanks for what you've done. Remember, every dollar counts on October 14th when the official entrance into our fund driving activities begins.
6 a.m. on 10/14.
The lockbox was created to get a head start on the fund drive. We're doing a great job. You are fantastic. We need more. 800-323-9262.
Challenge on the table. 1-800-323-9262. $2,500 from Anonymous in Burnt Hills, New York, if we can reach the 275 mark ASAP, and we are at 268,807. It's, you know, it's inching up thanks to the generosity of so many incredible listeners out there,
this
but we do need to ask more of you to please take a moment to give us a call or go online. 800-323-9262, WAMC.org.
It has been a good morning. If you have made your pledge, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you haven't, go. Now's your turn. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. Sure, you want a vote t-shirt? That's a $120 pledge or 10 bucks a month as a sustaining member.
Indeed.
Just ask for it. It's very stylish, Sarah LaDuke.
It is. I mean, I wear a black t-shirt nearly every day, so I'm pro the new black t-shirt.
I did not know that. I never noticed.
I just am not, you know,
you
I'm
wear
not
black
fashionable
t-shirts?
Almost every day.
No other colors?
Rarely.
You know, Jerry Garcia used to wear the black t-shirts, and then in the 86...
We're the same.
On the 86 tour, he wore red t-shirts on the East Coast tour.
What did it mean?
I don't know, but he was a little out of shape, and maybe he thought he should have wore a muumuu, you know?
We're not body-shaming Jerry Garcia.
No, I love that. I went to all the shows. No, yes. I'm just saying, you know, there was black shirt Jerry and red shirt Jerry. And then there was Coma Jerry, which came after that. But then he was okay.
Then he was okay.
800-323-9262. Hey, we're in the 269,000s, these folks. We're about $5,193 away from making the challenge.
We're getting really close. We do need to hear some regional news.
Yeah, let's break for the news.
Our news director, our very news director, the talented and hardworking Ian Pickus, is standing by, ready to tell you what's happening in the region.
Before we do that,
yes.
Anonymous of Burnt Hills says keep it going. So let's make that $275,000 mark by our next break when you next hear Sarah and me.
Yeah, we need a name for this duo, but we'll come up with it off mic.
The Dunderhead Duo.
Nope, I don't accept.
No, 10:16, we'll be back with you. We're going to break for news. Keep calling, keep pledging, WAMC.org or 800-323-9262.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our Lockbox special panel discussion on this Thursday morning. We welcome you. Great group this morning, Teresa Bourgeois, Nick Rangel, Mark Whitman, and we welcome you, panel at WAMC.org. We just have a few minutes before we go over to Ray and Sarah, and I want to get to some other subjects that are on the table here to discuss before we lose our panel for the morning. Also, a reminder that Arlie Russell Hochschild will be joining us to talk about her book Stolen Pride coming up at 10:30. All right, let's go to the issue of, and this also is the politics, right, of the challenges for Harris. A storm, a strike, and war abroad pose challenges for Harris, is the headline in the New York Times. Scenes of striking workers, hurricane devastation in the southeast, and missiles over Israel represent a rare moment of turbulence for Kamala Harris. Vice President Kamala Harris has cast herself as a candidate of the future, but she has been yanked back by the problems of the present as the Middle East lurches toward a wider war. A longshoreman strike threatens to undermine the country's economy, and Americans across the southeast struggle to recover from a deadly hurricane. The confluence of domestic and global traumas combined to knock Ms. Harris off a message that has been carefully calibrated since she took over for President Biden to showcase her as the avatar of, quote, a new way forward, as her slogan puts it. The rare moment of turbulence for Ms. Harris interrupts what has been mostly smooth sailing in her 2 months as the Democratic presidential nominee. Teresa, what to do?
Well, I was confused by the framing of this story, but I get their broader point. I mean, I think there has been turbulence all along. I think that she was shot out of, you know, that she's navigated through a lot. But I do think bigger point is that it's a challenge, but also an opportunity. It's a reminder to all of us that leadership matters and who you surround yourself with matters. And I think about the kinds of people who are, first of all, her leadership skills. You've seen her go out, talk about this range of issues. She has had a lot of experience in the Situation Room. She understands about coalition building. And I think evidence of her skills is those who are supporting her, from Republicans to Democrats, you know, progressives to conservatives. You have generals who worked for Trump who are supporting her. You have diplomats who work for Trump who are supporting her. You have economists who say that what she's doing is the right thing. So these are all challenging issues, but it's a reminder of how important it is to have these leadership skills, to understand the importance of surrounding yourself with good people. And you know, I think her focus, that she's focused on the average working Americans and lifting their lives up in each of these, it's evidence of why that's important. And you look at Trump's reaction, which has been very political and me-focused to these challenges, versus her reaction, and there's a stark difference and a clear choice.
Mark Whitman.
I want to bring up a trivial point first, which isn't related to Harris only, don't get me wrong. But I do think it's awfully galling that politicians generally hold one full-time job while spending more than a full-time job campaigning for another, whether it be governors or senators, or I'm not even sure the vice presidency is normally has to be a full-time job. But and I don't mean that as a criticism of Harris or Walz specifically. I just mean of the whole lot, for gosh sake. With respect to the risk that Harris faces between now and election, I thought about a very cynical conversation that could be taking place. You know, Netanyahu is no friend of Biden and would rather, I think we all agree, see Trump in the White House. And, you know, I can just imagine him when he gets the call from Biden as to, okay, how do you respond to Israel? Saying, well, I'm going to hit their oil shipping the oil shipping facilities, and Biden just thinking to himself, you know, if the price of gas gets too high, it will not accrue to Harris's benefit if that takes place before the election. And so now this character, Netanyahu, actually, I think, holds a card to potentially affect the results of the U.S. election. I mean, if he steps up the response that is coming, and it's a military response, and if it gets world oil markets concerned about Iran's ability to keep exporting oil, or even the Houthis' ability to further constrain naval traffic in the Gulf. This could be a real mess. I think Harris is doing what she can, which is being out front on the parts of this that are visibly manageable. I think it's sad that, Trump has tried to unfairly capitalize this, saying things in, about the response, particularly with respect to Georgia, that the governor of Georgia himself,
the Republican governor,
right, thank you, right, quickly said, you know, there's no there in terms of the federal government's being as responsive as it can be. And it's such early days. I don't know. Now is really a good time to call the question anyway. But I do think it's ironic that, you know, Biden, who has drawn so many red lines that Netanyahu has stepped right over, now faces the prospect that I think if Netanyahu wanted to tip the put his thumb on the scales of this election, I think he's got the ability to do so pretty profoundly right now.
Nick Rangel.
I think what the Harris campaign needs to do is remind voters of what Trump would do if. If Trump was in power right now, what would he do to address the longshoremen strike? He would use the federal government, send in troops, and force them to break up, right? If he were in power now, we know he has a history of having denied disaster relief in the past, and that conservatives have declined disaster relief for various regions. And we also know that as an anti-federal government administration, he would break apart the departments that handle the various aspects, the very many agencies and sub-agencies that do disaster recovery, from the Department of Education to Human Services. I think that's my time.
That's your time. All right.
We I got will, the hand.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to head over to Pledge Central, and we'll be back to wrap up our panel right after this.
Nick Rangel, that's your time.
I'm going to steal that.
Yeah.
If I just want to get out of here. I'll
right.
be like, oh, and I think that's my time. Adios.
800-323-9262. Sarah LeDoux.
Ray
the
Graf.
Pledges are flowing in.
It's a good feeling.
We're almost at our challenge, by the way.
Cool.
And I think we can make it. The challenge was $275,000 in the lockbox, and we'll get an extra $2,500 from Anonymous and Burt Hills, who gave us a little extension to get to that number.
Right.
And we are now a scant $1,700 short.
The total raised in the lockbox so far, $273,299. Incredible amount of money from our generous listeners.
800-323-9262.
Let's keep it rolling, though. Let's
All right.
thank some people. You want to thank some people?
Fine. Do you want to go first, or should... Oh, after you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you to Peter in Schenectady, New York, a new member. Ding.
Welcome.
We have the ding.
Yeah.
Very appreciative of the roundtable panel expertise. I'm quite concerned about the upcoming presidential election and thankful for the information presented on the roundtable. Let's hope democracy wins come November 5th. Thanks also to Jed and Sharon of Hillsdale, New York, who are increasing their sustaining membership.
Ooh.
So they're sustaining members. Marvelous. Thank you. Thanks to William in Stone Ridge, New York. Inflation is a big concern of mine. You got it. It's on the list. Thanks to Brenda in Queensbury, Anonymous in Mount Tremper, and Jill and Bub in Newport, New York, who are getting the vote t-shirt.
I love it. Now listen, if you have called in or gone online and given us your one issue that drives you most to the election box this year, hold that thought. At 2 p.m., my guest got sick. I'm going to have an open forum, and we're going to talk about just that. What is driving you? What's your big issue? That's today at 2 p.m. I call that a little forward promotion in the biz.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks to Jane in Great Barrington, who is a
new member.
Yeah, who says, my primary concern is having a mentally healthy, intellectually, and physically sound adult as president to support democracy versus a president who is none of that. Then, women's freedom to make decisions about our bodies, live lives, and family, LGBTQ rights, and leadership that takes the whole of this country into consideration with a long view. Jane, thanks for being a new member. Thanks for the pledge. Thanks to Anonymous in Hopewell Junction, New York, who is a new member, who says, For Ray, I mentioned Jerry wearing the red T-shirt.
Yes, indeed.
Trouble ahead, Jerry in red. Very nice, Anonymous. Thank you. Thanks to Tom in Remsen, New York.
I nodded along to that, like, all right, we're singing.
It's from Casey Jones.
Oh, okay.
You remember that? Driving that train high on whatever it is. Thanks to Mary in Bern, who says, I wish everyone could think more in terms of peace, kindness, and generosity rather than fear. Elvis Costello. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding, right?
That one I know.
Thanks to Gail in Clintondale, New York. Love this new format and all the programs, especially love Joe and Ray. Gail, we love you right back, babe.
1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. $1,201 to go in the challenge.
Well, all right.
And then we get an additional, we will earn
$2,500 more. From Anonymous.
Yes, indeed.
In Boynt Hills.
Indeed. Boynt Hills.
Boynt Hills.
Thank you to Dana and Dieter of Pleasant Valley, New York. So happy to support this amazing station. We heard from Patrick in Voorheesville, Anonymous in Old Chatham, New York, who say thank you for all your work to reach the fall fundraising goal as this critical election gets closer. It's more important than ever to have full news coverage from WAMC and NPR. Thank you for understanding that, Anonymous. That is exactly what we're trying to do, to shorten the fund drive, the upcoming fund drive, by filling the lockbox now. 1-800-323-9262. And thanks also to Jessica in Tannersville, New York, who says, no matter your particular concerns, it all comes down to democracy.
$1,201 to go to make this challenge. We're almost there. I don't know when we have to go back to the roundtable, but it's fairly soon. When that happens, I implore you to keep pledging. We're going to make this thing. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org.
1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. We need to make this challenge before we send you back. Well, no, it's not contingent on sending you back to the panel. We're not holding
it's
the panel
extortion.
Hostage. No, not at all.
No,
I just mean,
don't do that.
We're trying to raise the money. We got to raise the money.
It'd be a shame if something happened to the roundtable panel. You know what I mean?
1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. Please support us now. We are still $1,201 away from making the challenge. We've kind of frozen for a bit here. We would really love to hear those phones ring and see some online pledges come through. Great.
Now we're $1,141 away.
Okay.
So let's do this thing. Let's make the challenge. 800-323-9262. Barb King is trying to eat a muffin over here.
She's
make
allowed.
Her phone ring. Make,
she's allowed.
Is your phone ringing? The genie punishes. Oh, it's not your phone. All right, somebody
it's
else.
Coming make, around.
Make Barb's phone ring. 800-323-9262.
Thank you to Anonymous of Newtown, Connecticut, who loves the new format, and Paco of Wallkill, New York, who has enjoyed WAMC forever. 1-800.
Oh, I'll say something now?
323-9262, only if you feel like it.
Hello.
I can't make you speak.
I don't know what to say. 800-323-9262.
We've almost made the challenge.
When in doubt, give the phone number. We're almost there.
We're almost there.
I guess we could probably at some point, we'll make it, right?
Yeah.
And then we'll go back for a little panel?
Yes.
All right, so it wasn't extortion, but it did work. We have $121 to go. Let's go.
All right, $1 till we make the challenge.
9262.
Exactly, actually 100 cents until
Ian
we make
Pickus
the
is
challenge.
Here.
Do you have a dollar, babe?
How you doing, brother?
1-800-323-9262.
Man,
oh. You got the so now we got our sustainer. So if you're a new member, you get this.
Ding.
But if you're a sustainer, you get...
With a delay, still with a delay. 800-323-9262.
Well, I'm out of practice.
No. You hit it, and there's still, it just takes a beat before it says, oh!
I just thought it was my synapses.
No, it's not you. All right, we've made the challenge.
Hey-o!
Thank you, everybody.
Hey, everybody, keep pledging. That's what this is about today. 800-323-9262. Volunteers are standing by. WAMC.org. Back to the panel.
And with a communal victory in hand, we hand the airwaves back to Joe Donahue and the panel. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Congratulations. Wonderful to have the challenge. And, you hate to say it, but keep calling because don't worry, there'll be another challenge. There'll be another goal. We're not done yet. Still a long way to go. But we will celebrate making the challenge this morning. Absolutely. We'll send it over to Ray and Sarah in just a few minutes as we wrap up on this Wednesday morning, and they'll talk a little bit before we welcome Arlie Hochschild to the program this morning. A couple of letters here. I think I'll fill in with some letters, and it seems like a good thing to do. Aaron, all of them failed us.
Republicans at all levels of government, their silence on this matter turned them into all into enablers. Republicans in state government, Republicans in county government, Republicans in local government, all of them should have spoken up in one clear voice and denounced Donald Trump for his crimes against America and its democracy. The Republican enablers have failed America, and that from Aaron. Barbara says, oh, I do so disagree with the comment that there will be less fighting, less blowback if Harris wins by a large margin. I think a large margin, let us hope, will only stir them more. If he loses, there will be violence. There will be more griping. There will be more losses and more griping, more mouth from him. There will be potentially, nay, probably a repeat of January 6th to a worse extent. His followers do not want to lose their mouthpiece who gives them permission to run their own mouths. That from Barbara.
Well, I'm going to be a little more hopeful. And what's the alternative? You want him to win? No. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
We go to Linda. If Trump wins, I think there will be violence as well. That is a common theme of what we're hearing this morning. The fact that we are now afraid of being targeted by political violence from the right wing tells me that we are already lost. The fact that we have one party saying either we win or it's rigged and nobody is loudly calling them out tells me that we are already lost, shouty caps.
Well, we can...
The Democratic Republican... Check. The Democratic Republic that the U.S. used to be last century is in the ICU on life support and is dead from the waist down. It's a very vivid analogy. Unless the election defeats Trump overwhelmingly, it will pull the plug.
I just wanted to remind folks that black and brown voters have and are still targets of political violence, and that this is not a new approach by very conservative, very right wing Americans. And I think we need to really kind of grapple with what it means that the same group of people who have always targeted black and brown voters are now also targeting a broader group of Democratic voters generally. But I just had to remind folks that this isn't new, and many Americans have always been a target of that.
Teresa?
And we have a right and an opportunity to hold on to our democracy and say that that's not who we are, that we're not going to have violence. We are different than that. And that's up to every one of us to not only make a plan and vote, but encourage our friends, our relatives, and others. There's still time to register, and you can start in many places. You can start voting, bank your vote as soon as possible. It's really up to all of us. It's up to us to vote. It's up to us to encourage other people to vote. And it's up to us to speak out. They talk about, people aren't speaking out against the violence. It's up to us to set the tone and speak out against the violence and say we're different than that. We're better than that.
All right, let's go to this letter on abortion from Mike. I would love to hear your thoughts on the quotes from Melania Trump's book that give her unequivocal support for abortion and reproductive rights.
I mean, there's no universe where I would have read or will read Melania's book. So other than pulling the quotes out that have been reported on, I think that's great. I'm really happy about that.
But if people think that if this is a time to sort of blur what Trump's record is on this issue, it shouldn't work. Don't let it fool anybody. His record is clear.
And he's tried to blur it himself, obviously.
Right. Well, he has clearly, he's read the polls, and he knows that he's on the wrong side of this issue. And that his whole notion that, everybody wanted to turn it back to the states, that's not working. And so maybe they're trying this now. And so that's, them trying to find another way to raise some money by selling her books and trying to blur the facts of where he is on the issue. And where he is he appointed 3 Supreme Court justices. And the rest is, shall we say, history. And we have a change. Again, you have a choice. You can vote.
I mean, I'll have to take Melania, a wife, off of Nick's Christmas list.
Thank you. Yes, thanks.
Yeah, we have 30 seconds.
Unless it's about coal.
Go
it's
ahead.
My coal in my stocking.
Yeah, the coal in your stocking. That's right.
Aren't you interviewing her, Joe?
What are
the
we?
The request is in. We have 2 seconds, but go ahead.
Register and vote.
Register and vote.
We're out of time. My thanks to everybody. Teresa Bourgeois, Mark Whitman, and Nick Rangel. Coming up next, Arlie Russell Hochschild talking about stolen pride, wash shame, and the rise of the right. But first, we go back to Pledge Central.